Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudet.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
Translators are often avid readers, and we are too. And in this episode, we wanted to talk about how we decide what books we're going to read, what books we actually read, how we track that, and a lot more about reading. So before we get into all that, Corinne, to kick things off, what's been going on with you since the last time we talked? Any updates you have for me and our listeners?
Sure. So, you know, not that anything changes drastically in the pandemic.
I know.
But I have one more month of classes for my master's in conference interpreting program. So all of us are sort of ramping up to prepare for our big exit exams, which are at the end of June. Work has been busy, thankfully, and I got a new agency client. So I just wanted to put it out there that just when I had sort of lost faith in the agency market, I actually got two new good agency clients during the pandemic.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And this month I'm leading the third annual session of my March Marketing Madness Challenge Group. And this year we have about 60 people. So it is a large and lively group that is also motivating me. So that's been a lot of fun. What about you?
Yeah. So like you said, I kind of had that thought too, like, okay, we're going, plugging along. But well, one thing was, like you said, we're recording this March 15th, and in Colorado, this is not work related, but we had a huge snowstorm that was all over the news. And I think even the international news, that because I actually talked to my brother in Alaska, and he said, I heard that Colorado was supposed to have 5 feet of snow. So I ignored that because it was weird, you know, because I didn't believe it. But anyway, at my house, and I probably Corinne's, she might have had more than me because she's closer to the mountains. We had 2 feet of snow, and my husband and I spent about 4 man hours shoveling yesterday between us.
Yeah, us too.
There's more to do. Yeah, and we shoveled for our neighbors too, because they've done that in the past for us. But anyway, that was kind of a big fun thing that's random. But and I do love snow, as you guys have heard me say before, being Alaska girl. So that was kind of fun. And today it's sunny, so that's great. And anyway, talking about your March Madness, I was going to say too, that basically, I've been doing that too. There's so much going on that I've kind of been in the background, but everyone has really cool ideas, and people always give you new ideas that you didn't think of. And Corinne kind of prompts us all with cool ideas, that stuff we should be doing, but we don't. So. And I've actually been flooded with work from the people I've been reaching out to, just my current clients that I hadn't heard from in a while. And so, And also, I wanted to take this kind of at the beginning, I wanted to say hi to Rudy from Portland. He's one of our listeners, and I found out that we have a personal kind of 6th degree of separation going on. So not through work, but a personal connection. And so I wanted to give him a shout out. And thanks, Rudy, for listening, and to everybody else for listening. So Corinne, to jump into our topic for this episode, there's a lot of choice out there for what we can spend our time reading. And so I'm interested in what types of books you like to read, because I know we've talked offline about that before, but tell us about what books you like to read.
So I feel like I have sort of a weird path as a reader, in that, you know, like many of us, I was an absolutely voracious reader as a child. And I think, you know, I think it goes without saying that Eve and I both grew up before the internet. Like, you guys know we're not 22, right? So Eve and I both grew up before the internet. And some of my most vivid childhood memories are of reading entire series of books. Like, I had the box set of Little House on the Prairie. I read every Nancy Drew book.
Me too.
Yeah.
I read every, there was this one in middle school, not middle school, in elementary school, there was this series about American historical figures. And I remember going to the librarian and saying, I want more. And she's like, well, you've read them all.
I know. Oh my gosh. And sorry, we're already going off topic here. Did you know that Carolyn Keene, the author of the Nancy Drew books, isn't a real person? Like,
no.
It's a composite of a bunch of authors.
Oh, yeah. I guess I thought it was a pseudonym, but I didn't realize. Maybe I knew at one time.
Right.
I didn't remember.
So, I mean, it's sort of a pseudonym, but there were I'm mentioning that because, speaking to your point, there were so many Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys books that they were written by a team of authors because they churned them out so
So
quickly.
quickly.
And yeah, so they came up with a pseudonym for them.
And
Anyway.
speaking of generational differences, the Hardy Boys, I asked my kids, and I'm sure the rest of our younger listeners are like, who are the Hardy Boys? Because I was talking to them about, to my kids about them. My son was like, my 18-year-old was like, who's the Hardy Boys? Like, I'm like,
Right.
whatever.
I know. And
Look
then,
it
so
up.
that, yeah, then I got undergraduate and graduate degrees in literature. So clearly I'm a book person. But then, between reading all day for work and reading a lot with my now young adult daughter when she was little, and she also read entire series of books. So she was really into Ivy and Bean, which are sort of like the modern equivalent of Nancy Drew, about these two like adventurous girls. I really did not read many entire books for pleasure for years and years, unless I was on vacation. So the way I thought of it was like, it's just too many words.
I know
And
what
to
you
be
mean.
honest, it's one of the reasons that I got into playing music. So some of our listeners know that I am a mediocre but enthusiastic player of the Renaissance lute. And one of the reasons I got into doing that was because really I just hit like word overload. And I'd say until around the pandemic, I would read maybe three books a year because mostly only when I was on vacation. And I would, other than that, just read The New Yorker and The New York Times Magazine. But now, for example, I've already read six books in 2021 and we're only, 14 or whatever, 2.5 months into the year. So I would have also said up until a couple years ago that I read almost exclusively nonfiction, but lately I have been on a fiction roll, and I actually credit you, Book Club Girl, with that, Eve, and
Well,
the
thank you.
Global Reads Book Club, because honestly, when you kicked that group off with the translator,
You
and it
had
was
to
a,
read it.
yeah. So first of all, okay, hello, it's a book about a translator, and second of all, I don't remember how many pages it was, but I read it in like a weekend. That I thought, okay, this is doable. But honestly, that was probably the first novel I'd read in over 10 years that
And
was
that was a
not,
normal sized book. I mean, it wasn't
yeah.
super long, but it wasn't like real short. Yeah.
Right. It had been seriously probably 10 years since I read a whole novel that wasn't a children's book. And now I've actually read a ton of fiction. I also read business books. I'm moderately into self-help. I'll talk about those in the episode. But I've read so much more in the pandemic. And I think for me, it's like I have more time because so many fun things are canceled. And also, when you ask this question, I sort of dug into it, Eve.
Oh,
And I
good.
thought, like, part of it is I think it's like escapism. The reason that I'm reading fiction now is escapism because honestly, even when I have time, I just don't enjoy watching TV very much. I'm just not a big TV person. Like, my husband and I maybe watch, one movie a week. Whereas, you'll talk to people who in the pandemic are like, I watched 100 movies in 2021 or in 2020 or whatever. I'm just not a big TV person, even when I have the time. So that's me. What about you, Eve?
Yeah, actually, just some of the things you said stuck with me too. I was thinking, well, my kids were littler. Well, they're not little, but you know what I mean. Growing up, and so, like you said, with your daughter Ada, I read a lot of magazines because I couldn't focus on,
Me too. I just
like,
didn't have the attention span
yeah,
for
like
it.
I would think, like, okay, to read a short article, that sounds good. You know, I'd like to read something
Right.
interesting, and read something that was on paper, and as opposed to, and also, I'm not. I think I mentioned that before too. I mean, I do watch TV. I'm not like, philosophically against it really. I've just never, even in college and stuff when I was younger. I mean, even when I was like 12, but I've never been like super into TV. And I think part of it is it just takes a lot of energy too, really. I mean, it takes a lot of emotional energy for me. And I, different times, my kids laugh at me, but I'll be just like my son was telling me there was like some guys, like, I don't know, fighting or something. And he said, Mom, you were in the background going, you know, because it was stressful to me.
Right.
And I was like, I said, I did feel stressed out, but I didn't even know that I was like flinching, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, and also, yeah, so I watch TV sometimes, but I'm not a big TV watcher either. So, yeah, and I had noted, made in my notes too, that I had, watched a lot, read many, many kids' books, because I think, like you said, naturally, you and I are both readers, and so we wanted to impart that to our kids when they were younger. So we, that was a big deal. It wasn't like, oh, I read three kids' books. We had like hundreds of books, in French and English. We had
Right.
hundreds and hundreds of kids' books, so we had lots of books to read.
Yep.
But kind of getting back to my own, pulling my own self back after the kids are getting older. I have always really liked to read memoirs. So they could be about anything. A lot of times with the travel component, I think, like, I
Oh,
mean, you know,
cool.
like about, you know, American women moving to Cuba or
Right,
I don't
yeah.
know. And I like a lot. And I went through a stage where I read a lot of books about memoirs from famous chefs. I don't know. I'm not someone who's into
Oh,
cooking. I know a
yeah.
lot of people like cooking shows, and I like reading about food, but I don't really like cooking shows because I don't watch a lot of TV. But I liked reading about, you know, memoirs about people who are in the food industry was interesting. A phase I went through. And yeah, and also my preferred type of memoir, everyone's gonna laugh, is, as people know, I married a French guy for a long time now. And one of my favorite genres is like American woman slash married to French guy.
Oh, like intercultural relationship
Yes.
books. Yeah, not self-help books, but intercultural relationship
Yeah. Well,
memoirs.
they
Yeah.
might be self-help for me, no.
Right.
No, because I'm like, yeah, seriously, like that
Right.
happens to me. And I've been thinking for years, and I actually started to write a book when I was in France in 2012 on that. But I thought I could totally write those books. That's the funny thing, except that I always think, but nobody cares about it because I'm not living in Paris right now. Like I basically have the same kind of interactions, but on the flip side, right? Because I live in the U.S. and not in France, whatever. Anyway, but I over the years we've been together, you know, I have all those kind of same kind of funny cultural stories and stuff like that. Anyway, so that's seriously, like any book, maybe you guys can test me. If you've heard of a book about a woman, either girlfriend or wife of a French guy, who's wrote a memoir, I probably read it. Anyway. And also just memoirs in general about people who've gone to France, and it's just kind of a fun thing for me, you know, the intercultural piece. Yeah, and I read a lot of fiction, and like you said, you know, for the escapism. And but I try to read, I don't read like super heavy literature, but I don't know what the name of that genre is. You know what I mean? It's not bodice rippers, as we say, but not but you know. I guess it's considered modern literature, you know, but maybe not the heaviest thing out there, but just, you know, books that are on the reading list or whatever. So, and then I also really like to read books about language, like things that talk about, I don't know, just things about French language or about English language, you know, like a history of language, or here's how these words developed, or that kind of thing. And I have an example of one I'll talk to you guys about later. I also like to read cookbooks because I'm weird, but I think that's kind of a cultural thing too. You know, reading through them, even if I don't make all the recipes in them, I like to read through them, actually spend time like reading them, because it's kind of a
Well,
fun thing. And a lot of
and I
times
think that's a
people.
specific reading habit. Like my dad is a, you know, serious amateur cook, and he does exactly the same thing. Checks cookbooks out of the library and reads them for pleasure without ever cooking anything from them. So I think that's
Yeah.
a like really, you know, sort of a niche reading habit.
Yeah, and I think too, it's kind of related for me anyway to that kind of intercultural thing. Like I'll be like, oh, I want to get this book on Indian cooking, and then I'll read like all the comments, and I will probably make some of the recipes, but it's more like just to kind of read it. It's cool. And and I'm also looking at like, oh, and are they doing it in grams? Are they doing it in, you know, metric or imperial or whatever. And also this is kind of gone by the wayside, but I used to collect dictionaries. I mean, it's kind of the, I mean, I still have some, but I mean that you don't, a lot of stuff is electronic now. So, I mean, you can still collect them, I guess, but anyway, and collect, you know, the same idea of collecting books about maybe on words that are less narrative, but were things that have to do with language and words. And I still collect grammar books because I'm weird. And I still can't believe that my Becherel is like 30 years old. So, yeah. also, I have read parenting books and some stuff now that's kind of related to parenting books, but my kids aren't little, but stuff that's related to like relationships with your kids and stuff like that.
Family communication. Yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. And then also, yeah, before we got on, I was telling Corinne, I do read some business books, but I don't love reading business books. And kind of like what you said, going back to the idea of I do that kind of thing all day, and I feel like I get that from other places, but sometimes I read business books. And mostly when I do, it's kind of about more like how to be more efficient or something like that. That's the kind of thing I focus on. So, yeah. So related to all that, Corinne, I do feel like it's really important to specifically set time aside for reading. And especially as related to the topic of our recent episode before this one, which had to do with self-care. So I think it's all related to making sure you take times, take time to do for your things for yourself that you feel are important. And I have been setting, related to reading, I've been setting aside at least 30 minutes at the end of each day to read my current book or books, as many of us who are readers have more than one book going on. Mm-hmm. and also I have been reading more often on the weekends, kind of related to what you said, during the pandemic, since my weekend schedule with my family isn't as busy as it was pre-pandemic. And I mean, we're still kind of busy, but we're in this stuck in our house, right? So I obviously have more time to do some of that. And so I do track what I read, and I'll talk about that later. And I think it probably would be good to track too how much time I read, just out of interest, because I like those kind of stats, but I don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I'd be interested in hearing from other people, or if you have ideas on that, or from hearing from other listeners, like if they actually track the amount of time they read, and if they feel that's actually helpful, or does it stress them out, like, I don't read enough, or I'm reading too much, or whatever.
Right.
I don't do that, but I'm interested about, and I'll talk a little bit later about how I track what I read. So how do you make time for reading?
Yeah, so I think standard, like you and a lot of people, I read right before I go to bed, particularly because I try to stay off screens at that time. So even if I read nothing else, I read either The New Yorker or The New York Times Magazine in bed for like 15 to 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I've also found a couple of other sort of reading hacks that I wanted to share with our readers, with our listeners, such as one thing I started doing that it sounds simple, but has been hugely helpful, is that I leave books that can be read in short increments sitting out in my house so that I read those instead of mindlessly picking up my phone when I have a few minutes to kill. Mm-hmm. So that sounds kind of dumb, but I find that in the pandemic, it really helps me with like mindless social media and doom scrolling. Mm-hmm. So here's an example. A colleague of ours, shout out to Pascal here in Colorado.
Oh, Pascal.
Yeah. So I had helped her out with some stuff and she gave me the Humans of New York coffee table book for Christmas. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has never heard of it, Humans of New York started out as a sort of Facebook and Instagram thing where this guy who's a photographer in New York just goes and talks to people about their lives. And it could be anything. Some are really sad. Some are really funny. Some are just one sentence, you know, things like that. But and he has since made a number of coffee table books.
And
of
it has really
interviews.
Beautiful photos, right? The big thing.
Yes,
is this, I mean,
incredible.
I guess if it's on Instagram, but yeah, the gorgeous
right.
photos. Yeah.
And she gave me the one that's just called Humans, and it's worldwide. Like
ooh,
he went
nice.
To like Poland and Pakistan, Iran, like tons of places.
We all want to be that guy.
Yes, I know. So as an example, last night I was making pizza for dinner and I was waiting for the oven to preheat. And so I sat and read that book for, you know, 10 minutes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it actually puts me, I find, in like a better frame of mind rather than worse. Like these days, when do you feel better? When you
pick up your
phone and like, you know, scroll for 10 minutes. And I think, again, another basic thing, but something that those of us who grew up, you know, pre-internet automatically did and have probably gotten out of the habit of doing, is I stick a book in my bag if I might be waiting somewhere. Or for example, when I go skiing with my husband, he always skis longer than I do. So I take a book and I just read it in the car. So instead, again, of automatically grabbing for my phone, I do that.
That's interesting. This is why we're friends too, because I do that.
Right.
I don't do the first one necessarily, but I like that idea of, I mean, mm-hmm. I kind of have books around my house that I should be doing that with, but I'm not. So you're inspiring me, but mm-hmm. I do have for a long time with my kids, you know, riding, driving them around, blah, blah, blah,
right.
or whatever. Even now, because now my son's a soccer, a ref for soccer. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, I purposely take a book so I don't just go on the phone.
Right. So Eve, I think one of the issues with being an avid reader is there's so much out there. And like in the internet age, we're already in such information overload. How do you decide what to read and how do you put it in your like to be read queue?
Yeah. So I know there's that. I could talk about this for the whole time.
But
yeah.
I mean, honestly, you could, because now you have to pick books for the book club too. So
you actually do
this sort of semi-professionally.
But this one thing that sounds kind of dorky, but this one magazine that I keep, have kept reading is, I think I might've mentioned this before, but it's Real Simple magazine in the US. I just like it. They have nice articles and they every month have a, book list. It's called the Books List, Top Picks for Every Taste. And they actually do. I make a point of reading it every month. And then some of them, the descriptions are always really interesting, but some of them I think, oh, that sounds nice, but I don't want to read that one. But there's always at least one. And like, for example, one that I heard about was the convenience store woman that we read in the book club too. That's where I first heard about that. It was kind of in this mainstream magazine for, you know, probably middle-aged women or whatever. But and that, so they have really interesting books actually. So I do use that one and a lot. And so what I do when I get a book from that list that I want to read is I immediately go to the website from my local library and I look it up. And then I put it on hold, because if they have it in stock, what they do at my library and probably a lot of libraries is then they will put it aside for me. And so that was really helpful during the pandemic, because I was laughing because my kids were asking me the other day, like, what's the place you've been to the most during the pandemic? And I'm saying literally, well, I guess after the grocery store, the library, because during the pandemic, I would totally, you know, have my list going. And then I would say like, okay, good. And they'd call, you know, they'd send me an email and say, okay, this book is ready to be picked up, or these three books are ready to be picked up. Mm-hmm. So, So the other thing is, like you said, with the Global Reads Book Club, we decide as a group, I decide people send me suggestions, and then so that's really cool, because sometimes even if we don't pick them as a group, I have ended up reading some of those. So that's another way. And that's the same thing. Then I go to my library, or I'll go online or whatever and order it. But a lot of times I go to the library and get them to hold it for me and go pick it up. And then with the Global Reads Book Club, like I said, we all decide together which ones are going to read, but I get input and then I have everybody vote on it. So also, as you guys probably all do, I sometimes will just see books. I don't know, someone will talk about it in the news, or it'll be in a podcast or a news broadcast or whatever. And so I'll make stuff down about that. Let's see. I'm looking at, I had some other notes on here. Oh, about the library, I wanted to talk. I'm sure a lot of you, I've just always been a real big library person, and I have cards to many different libraries.
Well, the Colorado library system is really amazing. Like, I mean, basically here, I sort of feel like if it's in print and if you're willing to wait, you can get it.
Yes. That's what I was going to say, that I have. And the reason I have, basically, you don't really need to. I'm just obsessed with libraries. And I like being able to go if I'm visiting in Boulder, I want to be able to go to, if I have time to stop by that library, I want to have the card instead of my card for my local one, which, you know, is just 20 miles, 15 miles away or whatever,
right?
10 miles away. But I have them for Denver. I have them for Fort Collins, which is north of us. I have them for Leadville, where I go often, which is in a mountain town in Colorado. I have it for Boulder. I have it for Lafayette, you know, where I live, and I have it for the next town over. And I think in the modern age, that's really actually good though for eBooks, if you want to get, because sometimes like a couple of those are all in the same consortium, but then the Denver one is different and they have a lot more resources because it's a bigger city. And so if I'm looking for an ebook or an audiobook, then I'll go on to Fort Collins or Denver and I'll say, oh, could I get on hold for that one? And I might get it faster. So anyway. Right. And then, like you said, Corinne, I don't know if they're still calling it, they used to call it interlibrary loan, but if you want a book, you can get it. So I often get books from they'll order it for me from, you know, the local university or whatever, as a loan, you know, as a library book, and you're not paying for it.
Right.
And one, I wanted to give an example of one of those that was really cool. And I can't remember where I read about it. This was one I heard on the news, or I read about it or something. And it was called Transformations, Harriet and Helena Scott, Colonial Sydney's Finest Natural History Painters.
Oh my gosh. Okay, that's nerdy.
Yeah. I don't usually read that kind of thing, but it was really cool. It was about these two naturalist artists, these two women who, when it wasn't common at all for women to be professional illustrators in Australia in the 19th century.
Wow, and so is cool.
Yeah, this woman today had done research where she reproduced all these like gorgeous illustrations, because there weren't, you know, they weren't color photographs back then. I don't know if there were photographs at all. And they would it's a really a wonderful treasure trove now too, for some things that have gone extinct, where what the biological landscape was like in Australia at that time. So it's really cool. Anyway, so I got that one from not my library. Through interlibrary loan, they got it from somewhere else. So another thing I get, books through library displays, like they'll have, you know, library's favorite, the librarian's favorite books or whatever.
Right.
Kind of like you see at the bookstore sometimes, right? And sometimes at the bookstore too, you know, at a bookstore, which we haven't been to in a while, but we have wonderful bookstores here in Colorado too, which I'm sure a lot of you do too. We have a really wonderful one in Denver that's called the Tattered Cover. That's a well-known independent bookstore. And then where Corinne lives, the Boulder Boulder
Boulder
Bookstore.
Bookstore.
Yeah, I
Yep.
was like trying to get the name right. And then also I get my library's newsletter, and they also have cool books. And then the library community reads, they call them around here, they call them one book. They'll be like, one book Denver, one book Boulder, one book Lafayette. And that means that they have this book that they have a lot of copies, or they have a lot of licenses to lend it out for ebooks. And then the whole community will read a book together and then to just discuss it. I also keep lists on Amazon. I also take notes in my personal note-taking app, which is OneNote, when I hear of other books. And yeah, and the other thing I was going to say, just kind of related to that, was I mean, I guess everybody could, everybody probably has their own way of doing it. I just think that then you need to keep the lists of how you once you find out, once you hear about all those books, like how do you put them in your queue, like you said. And another thing that I do is sometimes I get books from the library and I don't have time to read them all, or I, wasn't that interesting, and so I give it back. And so then in the US, people might not know, I don't, it might be this other places too, the library has to have your permission to keep a record of the books you've checked out. Because of privacy laws. And so I have, I activated that years ago. And so that too is kind of a list that's running for me if I want to. And I've done that different times. I go back and say, oh, what was that book I read, or what was that book I wanted to read? And I'll go back and scroll through it or whatever. So yeah. And I belong to two book clubs. One is the Global Reads Book Club, which is with people from all over the world. Yay. And it's electronic. And then I also belong to a book club in my neighborhood that in normal times meets in person. And right now we're meeting on Zoom. So that through both of those two, I'm exposed to books that I would not otherwise have thought of am reading. And a different book club that I belonged to years ago, one of my favorite books ever was the Persepolis series, and I never would have read that ever. And I think it's like the most awesome thing, and that was through a book club. So yeah.
Cool.
Well, so how do you find what you want to read next?
Yeah, so I'd say, as I mentioned, I'm a New Yorker addict. So books by a lot of the New Yorker authors write full-length books, and I read a lot of those. So one I would particularly recommend, and then I pushed it off onto like at least three other people because I liked it so much, is my husband, my mom, and a friend of ours, is called Say Nothing. It's by Patrick Radden Keefe, and it's a nonfiction true crime book about an unsolved murder during the Troubles era in Northern Ireland, which was a historical period that I didn't know much about, and I just devoured that book. I look at what Global Reads is reading. As I mentioned, I read The Translator with you guys, or I will sort of read books in tandem with other people based on their recommendations. So my sister-in-law and mother-in-law and I recently read a French graphic novel together, which is called L'Arabe du Futur. And
Oh
it's,
my gosh, I love that one.
yeah,
We have them
true.
all. We have them all in French. We have like all five. I
I'm going
think
to
there's
rave
five.
about it. Yeah. So it's called, the title's the same in English, The Arab of the Future. I'm going to talk about it a little more later. But the point being, yeah, it's one thing that I think is a cool thing you can do is if you have books that have multiple language editions, get together with a group of people and have some read the original and some read the translation, and then you can all discuss it together. So, for example, my Swiss mother-in-law and I both read L'Arabe du Futur in French, and then my sister-in-law read it in English,
That
and we're
is
all going to
cool. Yeah,
talk
and
about it
that's kind of what
together.
we do in the Global Reads Book Club. But and it's nice to do it. I mean, it. I feel personal. It's a personal level, but it's interesting and fun that you're doing that with your family too.
Yeah, so we're going to do that as a little family book club, and I'll rave more about L'Arabe du Futur later when we talk about our favorite books of the moment. And then my young adult daughter turned me on to All the Light We Cannot See, a novel that won the Pulitzer Prize. I feel like I'm sort of the last person on earth who hasn't read
I haven't
that.
read that
Yeah, but I'm currently reading it. It's set in France and Germany during World War II, so I kind of like that. And then I also go on sort of jags with authors. So this year in 2021, two of the six books I read so far were by Hilary Mantel. So she's a British author who writes historical fiction, and she's the only woman who has won the Booker Prize twice. And I actually think she'll win it again because she wrote a trilogy about Henry the Eighth era, and the first two books both won the Booker Prize. And whether or not you like historical fiction, she is just an awe-inspiring author. I mean, I sort of feel like for me, there are authors where their writing is not particularly amazing, but what they write about
Is compelling.
is super compelling. And Hilary Mantel is the opposite. Like you can read, you're like on the edge of your seat over a story that you could literally read on Wikipedia. Like I wonder what's going to happen. Well, we all know what happens, because it's about the Henry VIII era. So I read all of those, but the final volume, which is called The Mirror and the Light, came out right at the start of the pandemic. And then my husband got me her novel about the French Revolution, which is called A Place of Greater Safety, for Christmas. And I read that in like 2 weeks because I got so into it. But everything she writes is literally 800 pages. And it's not the kind of 800 pages that you can read in a weekend. It's dense. And then you end up going down these Wikipedia rabbit holes because there are these historical things that you're like, that can't be
Looking up,
true. And it is. So make sure you realize that about her before you get sucked in. But I think those are my main sources. So, Eve, let's talk about formats of books to read or consume. Once you decide what you're going to read, do you have a preferred format? Like, what makes you decide about one form? Do you choose a specific format based on the book, or is it just based on time? And how do you obtain those?
Yeah, so I think I actually have come to the I like reading in I mean like a lot of us I think I like reading in hardback the I mean paper you know I mean physical copy. It doesn't have to be hardback, it could be paperback, but I do I have lots of Kindles around the house, so I have one devoted to French books, one for my kids, one for me, whatever. And I think for the Kindle I like reading it I like reading things on that when I need to look up like words, like in French, like I can just touch it and it'll show me the word instead of being, because like I'm, like you said, I'm laying in bed reading or I'm comfy on the couch reading and I'm thinking, I don't want to get up and pull up the dictionary, which is good in a way because then you just kind of read it more, or I don't know what, fluidly or something. But so I think the Kindle has its purpose, and I do really like reading the Kindle when I travel, and I like that, there's a lot of stuff, all these books on there that it can hold, whatever, 10,000 books or whatever, which can be kind of daunting to organize though. But I think that being a reader, I do prefer reading them in some kind of physical form. But I think that they both have their place. One thing I don't like the Kindle for, and I was discussing this recently with someone else, was that I don't like it for things that are like referency, because I feel like you can't see. It needs to be something for me in the Kindle that's linear, like a
Oh, because
novel.
when you're like flipping back and forth or things like that,
Yeah, you
right?
can make notes and stuff, but I just don't love it. I mean, yeah, sometimes I do that, but if it's linear, and I consider most of the time novel is more linear than like a reference book, so I never buy reference books, even if they're way cheaper on the Kindle. And then so audiobooks, I know a lot of people read audiobooks. I'm not one of those people that thinks you didn't read it if you didn't if you listen to an audiobook. I do think,
No,
I
I
mean,
think
whatever.
audiobooks are totally legitimate.
Me too. But I just think for myself, I feel like kind of like we talked about before, like I get all this information, there's podcasts, there's this or that, and it's like it's always coming at me. And sometimes like I feel like I don't want information coming at me. Like I want to wash the dishes, maybe I want to listen to a podcast, maybe I want to listen to an audiobook, but maybe I want nothing. Like I don't constantly have to have information coming at me. I don't want to, all the time. So I don't necessarily, I'm not a big audiobook person, just because of that, because I want to give my mind a break sometimes. But the one time I was sometimes I do it. I'll go through phases where I'll listen to them. But when my mom was living with me recently, and we would listen to audiobooks together, and that was fun. And then I had like I talked about before, my little speakers that I have, different kinds of speakers. I have this really cool little speaker that she and I would get our book speaker and then we would start listening to our book together. So and then getting them, so as probably like a lot of you guys, I listeners and you, Corinne, I order I will buy books domestically, obviously, like locally, and sometimes I do buy books from abroad if I can't get them. And specifically for me, usually because something to do with French, in French or whatever. And I do try when I can to support the authors or local bookstores, if I can do that. I would prefer to do that. But sometimes too, like I kind of feel guilty about that sometimes, but I do buy from Amazon due to convenience, or because sometimes I can't get it, and they'll think, oh, because a lot of times too, they have Books that are, you know, they have brand new books, but then they also have all those different vendors who will sell used books. And maybe if you're looking for something a little weirder, then they can get that for you pretty easily.
Well, and it's like as someone who does read a lot of business books, I find like I really try to use my local bookstore when possible. But the issue is if someone publishes through Amazon, often that's the only way to buy it. So sometimes when I give people recommendations, I will say, like, generally, I would always say, like, you know, support your local bookstore. But a lot of like self-published business books, which I do read a lot of, are often exclusively on Amazon, or especially if they're electronic version only, 99% of the time, the only way to buy it is through Kindle.
I noticed that too. Especially, I mean, I've known that, but especially recently, I was making some notes from listening to Smart Habits for Translators, actually, and they had some stuff about our friends over at our other our friends at our other podcast. They mentioned some books, and I was looking them up, and I did try to look them up locally, and then I realized, oh, it's because they're published through the Amazon platform, so
Through
I have
Kindle
to do that.
Direct, right, or whatever.
And so then, and I have a habit too of getting books, supporting my local library too, and but then sometimes if I, you know, then a lot often, especially, I did a lot with kids' books too, but also with books for me. If I really really love them, then I will buy them after I get them from the library. And some books, you know, they're really great, but I just don't feel compelled to own them, and then I'll return them. But sometimes I'll go ahead and buy them. And then and speaking of, I did want to talk, give a little plug for our, you know, local bookshops. Like we have a really cute local bookshop where I am. In here in Lafayette in Colorado. And then we also have a we used to have we don't anymore, but in the place where I go a lot, which is Leadville, Colorado, we have a place up there too. And I often they used to have a really cute little bookstore there too, and they
Oh,
don't
right.
anymore. And I used to buy books there. And I was wanted to give a plug for that because I think that those types of places too are really good for local and regional books, you know, to go to those small
Oh, like
shops.
guidebooks, map books,
Yeah, not even necessarily that. Yeah, that too, but like local history or like I was thinking, and I think that's a way too to support the local economy. And really, you probably can't find those books anywhere else anyway. And so, for example, is my husband's hometown in France. When we go there over the years, I always make a point to go to their small bookstore that's on the main street, and they have a lot of books on Lorraine, like the region that he's from, or like, you know, I don't know, something about, oh, his region is a lot of World War One stuff. So if we want, you know, stuff about France and World War One or that region, which is a really famous area for different battles that happened, like that kind of stuff, you know, like it'd be really specialized. Like maybe you could get it somewhere else, but it'd be harder. And so I, those are always fun too to support the local economy and buy those in person. And then another example is I was going to give was the Librairie Gourmande in Paris, and they only sell cookbooks. And so that's just like super fun to go there. And they have them in all different languages too. And a lot of them are in French too. But, and then another example is Peppercorn in our local store in Boulder, Colorado, where Corinne lives. It's a locally based kitchen and cookware store, but a whole, they have like half the store practically is this huge selection of cookbooks from all over the world. So I'm just thinking about like specialized, you know, places where we can buy things too. Yeah. So, what format of books do you prefer, Corinne, and how do you get them?
Yeah, so I will say right off the bat, I hate reading on the screen other than for work. So, hate. I only do either paper books or audiobooks. And in general, I, especially pre-pandemic, I'm such a slow reader. Like, I don't actually read slowly, but it takes me a long time to finish one book because I read in small increments. And I like supporting authors. And these days, we don't eat out or travel or anything. So 90% of the time, I just buy the book and then I give it to someone else when I'm done. And like you, Eve, we have two huge shelves with hundreds and hundreds of books in our living room. And I think, you know, here it's worth saying, like, you know, I have an Amazon account and I do buy from Amazon. I don't boycott them completely. But I also think it's important to remember, like, how many, I mean, for those of us especially who love to travel, how many of your like iconic memories are of going to bookstores in places you visited? And like, bookstores aren't museums. You have to buy things. Like, bookstores don't charge you to get in, and then you can just browse and absorb the atmosphere for free. You have to buy something to keep them there. And I think, you know, for those of us who are Francophiles, if you saw the news that Gilbert
I knew you
Jeune,
were going to say that. That
I
was so
know,
sad.
which was like this, I mean, talk about iconic. Like, you you could not go to Paris if you're a book lover without going to Gibert Jeune, and they went out of business during the pandemic. So I don't want to be like scoldy about that, because I don't completely boycott Amazon, but I just think whenever possible, and I know in some places the issue is there is no local bookstore. You either Amazon drove them out of business or you never had one. And I feel like really fortunate to live in a place that has excellent local bookstores, and I try to patronize them whenever I can. But I do also listen to some audiobooks. So for example, my husband and I recently drove to Utah to visit my daughter, and it was like 7 hours each way. And we listened to the audio of a book by Andrea Pitzer called Icebound, which is about a polar expedition in the 1500s, a Dutch expedition to the polar ice cap.
In the 1500s?
Ooh,
and so we have to remember to put all these books in our...
We'll put the books in the show notes.
Because this one I'm pulling out for my husband. He would love that. Yes. I mean, me too, I guess.
But. Right. 1500s expedition by the Dutch to find the elusive, you know, passageway to China. Mm-hmm. Like the Dutch had this idea that they were going to become a, you know, sort of world trading power by finding a way to get from Europe to China over the polar ice cap, which of course is impossible until global warming goes on for another few decades, then we'll be able to. So we listened to that. And I will also mention, this is sort of a, you know, fun factoid that your topic made me think of. The only time in my life I've ever run the car out of gas since I started driving when I was 17 and I'm now 49 was listening to the audiobook of Hilary Mantel's Bring Up the Bodies while driving across the Utah desert.
You weren't alone. Only started in America, where you know that's in Nevada.
No, we were on the highway between Fruta, Colorado, and Moab, Utah. And I mean, partially that goes to show you that, like, that is a pretty desolate part of the US, because in my defense, like, you know, the low fuel light came on, and the low fuel light is there to tell you to go to a gas station, right?
But there weren't any for 40 there miles. Were none.
Right. There were none. And the car ran out of gas. But the point being, I was so absorbed in the audiobook of Hilary Mantel's Bring Up the Bodies. It has an incredible narrator. But otherwise, I only use paper. And I think the exception would be that through, you know, my blog and the online courses I teach and things like that, sometimes I want to look at a business book that I'm only peripherally interested in, but I want to check it out. And often I find that the Kindle version, and this is why I say, like, I can't completely diss Amazon, because the Kindle version sometimes is like $10. So if I think, you know, I really only want to read this to, you know, skim it and write a short article about it, or, you know what it's like to tell students in my online courses about it,
right,
then I'll sometimes
it's
get
efficient.
The Kindle.
Yeah.
Yeah, get the Kindle version and read it in a web browser, because it's usually, yeah, inexpensive and efficient. But other than that, I try to order from my local bookstore. So
actually, before we go to the next question, I forgot to say two things that you reminded me of as you were talking. I wanted to say that when we moved to our new house, as I've mentioned before, 4 years ago, we moved into this new house. There was the builder built a bedroom that we didn't really feel like we needed as a bedroom. And so I had it converted into a library. And so Corinne has seen that one whole book, one whole wall is a bookshelf. And that, so I also use that as a source. So I haven't read every single book on there. And I'm a lot of them I have, of course, but you know, then I think or things I want to reread, I go back in there. That's another source. Like your bookshelf is probably your house, Corinne, of things you want to revisit. And then another thing when we were talking about traveling was, this is kind of sad, I think, but for decades, I would take an extra suitcase to France and I would buy books, you know, and fill them up. And then I would take like the carry-on, and like, not like a huge suitcase, but a normal size carry-on. And I also, if you fill a regular size suitcase with books, it would be too heavy. It would be over the 50 pounds. But I used to fill up a smaller suitcase of books. That's what it was for. I would take it empty and then bring it back, but we can't really do that anymore. I mean, I could, but they charge a lot now for extra international suitcases. So I've kind of stopped doing that, but anyway, I just wanted to mention that, but go ahead. Sorry.
Sure. So Eve, let's move on to tracking. I know you mentioned that you like to track what you read, and could you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, so I have kept a handwritten journal. I'm going old school on this, people. It's analog since 1970, 19, not 77. Okay, I wasn't that old yet. Since 1997, which is still a long time ago. I started that because at that time I was trying to remember. I went in graduate school. I went through this cool this phase where I read these cool books about India. Like I told you, like, okay, I went through this phase where I'd read about traveling to Cuba or whatever. I read all these really cool books on India and these different memoirs about India, and I couldn't remember this one I wanted to remember, and it just and I still don't. I'll never find it, and because I can't remember enough about it because it was so long ago. But that really bugged me, and so I thought I have to take, note down everything I read. So I started doing it in this journal that my sister had given me before when I was traveling that I never used. And so I was like, this is the perfect thing. And so, as an aside, she gave me two journals, and one of them I use to write down every trip I take. And so I've done that since 1997 too. And so, but this is, we're talking about the book one. So in for me personally, I only include the title, the author and or the translator, the publication date, and the month and year I read it. And so I know some people do this kind of thing and they like to include more like their thoughts or the genre or whatever. But knowing myself, I was afraid that if I did that, for me, it's kind of a big deal to have been doing this all these years and have kept
Yeah,
it
no
up.
kidding. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh,
And
right.
so I at the beginning I was smart. I knew myself and I thought I want to make it streamlined so that I actually do it.
Right, right,
And
right.
so I
Yep.
was afraid if I tried to make it too big of a project, like, and then I'm going to write all my thoughts about it. I was like, eh. And
Yeah.
so, and some people do that and it works, but and so I don't do that. I just write down, what I read, and I mean, like I said, just those basic things about it. And so recently, however, I also received a really cool book from our friend Madalena at the holidays, and I have it right in front of me. It's like a little, what would you call this? It's a little. A notebook, kind of, but it's bound, but it doesn't have a spiral. When I said notebook, it sounds like a spiral notebook, but it's called Another Book in the Books.
Oh,
And then when you
cool.
open it has it's kind of cool. And I think I might want to try to do this with books that like are really special to me and use this one because it says it has room for the title, the author, when you read it, where you've got the book, and then it says I read this book by myself or with whatever. That'd be kind of have would have been fun to mark down with my mom, If you have a favorite character, the number of pages, the genre. I read this book slowly. I read this book quickly, and you can rate it. This book made me learn something, feel excited, fall asleep.
Right.
So, and then it has a section where you draw your favorite scene from the book, and I actually think that's kind of a cool way to work through how you feel about the
Oh, that's
book.
kind of cool.
Because every book we can't read with a book club, but we want to discuss it, or we feel like, oh, there's all these emotions or these feelings that I came out of this book, but what do I do with them? So I thought that was kind of cool. And it also has new words that I learned reading this book. So that's a cool one too. It's called Another Book in the Books. And I really
Very
like that.
cool.
So yeah, so I also know that a lot of people use Goodreads. And when it first came out, I tried to do that too. But that's just too much effort for me. I mean, I just felt like also because I was at the time at the beginning, I was like, oh, I want to go back and like fill in every book that I have in my own book,
Right.
my analog version. And I just thought like it's just way too time consuming. And I also feel like for me, my own hard copy book is just right with me all the time. It's in my nightstand, the table next the little dressers next to my bed. And so I always know where it is. And I just feel like I don't want to always have to run to the computer to do that. Like we're on the computer too much already. But I know a lot of people do use it. And I do use Goodreads in the sense of like looking up books or looking up recommendations, stuff like that. But I don't use it to track my books. So yeah, and I mentioned earlier that I kind of use the library to track not necessarily the books I've read, but some of them I've read, but books that I kind of was interested in at one time or another. And yeah, so that's how I do it. What do, Corinne?
I'm super low tech, like even lower tech than you, in the sense that I still use a paper date book, and I just write the books for the year on the notes page in my date book. But it works for me.
Okay. Cool. So I don't know. Did you have anything else you want to add? Or I think it's time to share the books that we're currently reading, or books that we really love, or that mean a lot to us that we want to share with our readers. Or
Yeah.
did you have anything else you wanted to add before we get to that cool section?
No, I just want to hear about your current or favorite reading list.
Okay, yeah, I read a book called, and I think I got this one from the Real Simple magazine as a recommendation too, actually. This is not the one I'm reading right now, but I read it a couple of weeks ago, and it's called Memorial Drive, A Daughter's Memoir.
Oh.
And I don't know, like sometimes it was really good, and it was, but I also feel like, so I don't want people not to read it, because I've had delayed trauma, I think, from reading it. Because what it's about is this woman who actually is, I don't know if I pronounce her name right, but it's Natasha Trethewey. She's a U, she was a former US Poet Laureate, so she's this
Oh,
super
right.
accomplished person today. And
Yeah.
she what the story is about is that she her parents got divorced, and she was a mixed race child. Her father was white and her mother was black, and they she was born in the South, and then they ended up moving to Atlanta, which was still in the South, but she was originally, I think, in was it Missouri and more of the deep South anyway. And then her mother remarried a man who ended up murdering her mother when she was
Oh,
19, and it
oh
was
my
really,
gosh.
and it was, I was like, huh? You know, I mean, like reading it was very, she's a really good writer, and it was very compelling.
But that's
And
intense.
yeah,
But
and
yeah.
it wasn't necessarily, the book wasn't about necessarily that act. I mean, she leads up to the act, and we find out about it, but that's
Right.
just a small part of it. It was more about how like everything affected, you know, what happened before that and how it affected her, and how, you know, kind of work through it and stuff like that. So that was really good. And I did feel like, at first I felt like, okay, whatever. And then like 3 days later, I was like, oh my God, I'm like obsessed with that now. It was kind of post-traumatic, but
Wow,
it
yeah.
was really moving. And then some other ones I'm reading are Trevor Noah, Born a Crime. I was reading that with my family. I think that's a memoir for stories from his South African childhood. I'm just kind of going through, I wanted to talk about some of the ones we're kind of interested in now. One I got referred from on Twitter from Karen Kachik is Ultra Learning, Master Hard Skills, Outsmart the Competition, and Accelerate Your Career. But
Cool.
so like I said, that kind of goes, I think, sort of with my efficiency theme, you know, like how to be more efficient. And also another book that's on my to-read shelf, my more immediate to-read shelf right now is called French Like Moi. So as I told you guys, this is not a French wife, this is a man. And the subtitle of this book is A Midwesterner in Paris. So who couldn't love that and want to
Oh,
buy that book?
cool.
And then another one that I got just recently from the library was through my research for the Global Reads Book Club, and one that wasn't chosen, but that we can't choose them all. So I didn't want the book to feel bad, and I checked it out anyway. And this one is called It Would Be Night in Caracas by Karina Sains Borgo, and it was a novel that just looked really compelling. And then the one that I mentioned earlier that I talked about, I like to read things about language. The one I'm reading right now is called Shady Characters: The Secret Life of Punctuation, Symbols, and Other Typographical Marks by Keith Houston.
Cool.
And it's really awesome. The first section was on the what it's called, the pilcrow is on the paragraph mark.
Oh,
And like it was
cool.
really cool actually, because the paragraph mark that we see when we make it where we can see the, you know, you can
Where
see the
you can
spaces,
view
and
the non-printing characters,
yes,
on
thank
your
you.
screen.
And
Yeah.
that it actually goes back, like, you know, to the before the Middle Ages. And then he also talked about which one, what was that called? There's a it's called, I can't think of what it was, where is it? The interrobang. It was for a while, like in the
Oh, right, the
60s.
question mark exclamation point,
Yeah,
right.
and he goes to the history of that, which is kind of interesting because the history of that is recent as opposed to going back to the 12th century or something like that. Anyway, so
Right.
that's a really cool one. And I got referred to that book through ACES, the Society for Editing. They have a section on their website that talks about cool
Oh,
books. And the
yeah.
book I'm reading today is called This Close to Okay, and it's a novel by Lisa Cross Smith. And it's about this woman who stops this guy from jumping off a bridge and how their relationship develops. And it's a New York Times best-selling author. So that's where
Cool.
I am today. So tell us about books. Oh, and I didn't want to say my most favorite book of all, my favorite book of all time is Julia Child's My Life in France. And I'm not reading
Oh,
that right now, but
right.
I have it. And it's
Yeah.
just a really cool book because she talks about how she kind of got in, just really the first book about how she got into cooking. She wasn't like a cook growing up or anything. She, if people don't know, she was a very famous kind of the first TV chef in the US and who really kind of turned Americans on to cooking from the outside world and not getting away from TV dinners and, you know, meat and potatoes and stuff like that. And, but what's really interesting and compelling to me about that book is not just that part, but she talks about immediate post-war France, post-World War II France in this way that I just, it really like struck me as like, oh my gosh, that's how it was. Like how this basically a war-torn country and that we don't see that today anymore, but it really was. And a lot of Europe was like that, you know, of course, or other war-torn countries, but it's really historically interesting from that perspective. And her husband was an employee for the US embassy. So, okay.
Cool. So as I said, I really never read a graphic novel in my life, and I am just hooked on the Arab of the Future series. But if you speak French, please read it in French because the language aspect is so good. So in French, it's L'Arabe du Futur, same title, and the author's name is Riyad Satouf. So he is or was a cartoonist for Charlie Hebdo, you know, which sadly a lot of us know from the terrorist attack there, but which is, you know, well known for its incredible like political cartoonists. So Riyad Satouf himself is half French and half Syrian, and lived his childhood in an extremely complicated family situation.
And talk about intercultural, man.
Yeah. Between France and the Middle East, including a stint in Gaddafi-era Libya. So it is, I mean, the subject matter is super interesting. And just his style, I found incredible. And I read volume one. And I think, are there five volumes of it?
I was trying to think if there's a sixth one. I can't remember because I got the latest one, but I can't remember now which it is, as if it's five or six. I think it's five.
Yeah, and talk about intercultural relationship issues.
I know.
We won't give it away, but yeah, High Arab of the Future, L'Arabe du Futur, highly recommended.
Oh my gosh, and my 18-year-old is like, this thinks it's like the, you know, just, it's really great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Too, like you said, yeah.
Right. It's like, I mean, and I just feel like it's, I never really got, you know, in quotation marks, graphic novels. And I feel like reading this is making me sort of get why people are so into them, because it's like, it's funny and it's poignant and, you know, in a way that I think would have been really distilled had he written it as just a narrative book, you know?
Well, it's really a work of art in the way, I don't mean, just, yes. I mean the work of art, not just, oh, he's an artist, but I mean, like all of it together is a specific art form that I too, like I said before, I read Persepolis by Satrapi Marjan. I can't pronounce her name really, but it was that she, and that was originally written in French too, even though she's from Iran. But yeah, I think that I wasn't that into him either, but these, when you see this, it's really kind of this separate art form, you know, of its own that really is worthwhile.
And then I think, like I said, I'm sort of moderately into self-help and like what you might call business self-help books. And I think the key there is to remember that people who write self-help or business advice books are by definition very extreme people. And that you don't have to live your whole life like that, but they may have a shred of truth for you. So for example, right now I'm reading a business book called Six to Seven Figures. Mm-hmm. So how to take a, you know, $100,000 business to $1 million in revenue. Mm-hmm. And I don't aspire to have $1 million in revenue. And I don't want to do everything in this book, but I just think if you are sort of moderately into that genre, you can usually glean something really helpful from it. And that would be my advice about like that, those genres can make you sort of feel bad about yourself. If you think, now I have,
that was a good point. They're kind of, like, I mean, they have to be really, not even passionate, but like kind of obsessed.
Yes, right. That someone who writes that kind, well, I mean, I think if anyone has ever read sort of the, you know, iconic example would be Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Workweek. And if you've ever read anything Tim Ferriss wrote, it takes about 10 seconds to realize he is a very obsessive, extreme person. Mm-hmm. And that's why people write books like that. But you don't have to live that way to get a shred of truth from it, which I think can be extremely helpful. Mm-hmm. And then for my blog, I reviewed a book that I think anyone who translates into English could benefit from. The Oliver, sorry, the author's name is Oliver Durs, Dirs, but pronounced like Sirs. He lives in the UK and he's a Swedish to English translator, and he wrote a book called Good Words Fast, which is like the best business thesaurus that you ever read in your life. So he has distilled it down to the words that you use over and over in business writing and many, many ways to say them, including idioms and culturally specific expressions and things like that. So I really recommend Good Words Fast, and we can also link to my review of it.
Oh
And
yeah, and I saw the video, the interview with him. It looked really interesting. And
Yeah, I
I
did a
that
video
yeah,
interview,
neat.
and it started out because Oliver himself is a translator, and he started an Excel spreadsheet of those types of words for himself. You know, what are some more interesting ways to say said? And it expanded, and he found it so useful, and so did other translators, that he made it into a book, and I love the book.
But what I like about that too, though, is what you said is kind of that even within that, there's the niche of that he's really thinking about business writing. Because, like, just saying, you know, I guess I've done that before different times when I was translating this story, and I thought, okay, I want to say, how do you say said differently? And I went on and looked different things up. But it's interesting that, like we say, you can always niche things down, right? Because you're
Yes.
saying that he's doing it specifically for a business audience, not for a chick lit audience or whatever. You know what I mean? So
Correct.
that's super interesting too. That's it's even more useful, it would seem, in that niche approach.
Exactly. So yeah, good words fast. And then just because you were talking about travel memoirs, and because I think we could all use a little like fun and escapism right now, this book is not new, but I wanted to recommend it. It's called Pancakes in Paris. And it's a memoir by an American guy who moves to Paris to start an American breakfast restaurant. And
Gosh.
it's hilarious.
I know, I don't know
So,
this one. See, you stumped me on that one.
yeah,
That's
Pancakes
what I
in
need to get.
Paris. So this American guy moves to France, and he sort of theorizes, which when I think about it is true, like the idea of an American starting a restaurant in France sounds crazy, but what is the meal that America does better than any other country? Breakfast. Like, so he starts a pancake restaurant in Paris. And so part of it, and if you are a Francophile, the intercultural aspect of trying to
Oh my
run a
gosh.
business.
I might have to read this with my older son. Sounds really fun.
Yes, the intercultural aspect of trying to run a business as an American in France is, yeah, highly recommended and really light and funny. Pancakes in Paris. So, listeners, we would love to hear from you on this topic too. You can visit the Speaking of Translation site to tell us what books you've been reading lately, or tweet to us or email us at speakingoftranslation@gmail.com, or find either of us on social media, eBoda or Corinne McKay on Twitter, and let us know.
Yeah, thanks everybody for joining us every time you listen, but also today for this topic that we were passionate about. And because I was thinking about Audrey Hepburn's character, as she says in the movie Sabrina, that Paris is always a good idea. Well, books are always a good idea.
So true.
And especially important during the pandemic, like I always say, and Corinne says, stay safe and stay sane.
Yeah, your motto that now we've all totally stolen. Thanks, and don't forget to subscribe to Speaking of Translation on your favorite podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher, and hop on over to our website, speakingoftranslation.com, if you'd like to leave us a comment.